Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. You're tuned in to Columbo Chronicles at Blog Talk Radio. Follow the mover and shaker, award-winning author and host, seen on TV and radio, Rose Columbo. Every Wednesday, Rose interviews prominent experts and authors on politics and social justice. Call in and listen or ask the guests a question at 646-564-9742. Now, here's Rose.
Hi, everyone. Here's the Rose Columbo, and I'm right here for you at Worldwide Online Blog Talk Radio. And welcome, everyone in the USA and around the world. We love hearing from you. We love the fact that you're listening and that you are learning and learning from the experts in the world of authors and experts, as well as listening to Rose's political commentary. And tonight we have a very special guest for you, and she is an author. Her name is Lee Gail Gruen, G-R-U-E-N. And she had a 37-year career as a probation officer, and she retired at age 60. And just for fun, she started attending an acting class for seniors. And a few weeks later, her mother unfortunately passed away, and she invited her grieving father at age 85 to come to the class with her. And she's going to tell us this magical journey and this true story. And she's going to share her wonderful book with the audience. And she's going to tell you more about that book in just a little bit. And the name of the book is Adventures with Dad, A Father and Daughter's Journey Through a Senior Acting Class. And so just in a little bit, we'll be talking to Lee Gail Gruen. So stay tuned, and we're going to touch on a few issues of the day while we are awaiting the time frame to enter into the world of authors and experts. As we do every Wednesday evening from 8 to 9 p.m., but I do want you to know and to bookmark the time will be changed to noon starting next Wednesday, the 28th, at noon to 1 p.m. It's lunchtime, so you can grab a snack, grab a cup of coffee, a cappuccino, and sit back and relax when you take your break or your lunch hour, and listen to Columbo Chronicles Live. There's an article that caught my attention, and it may have caught your attention, but out here in the USA, we are experiencing a flood of foreigners into our country, legally, illegally. Some are fake Christian refugees, some claim to be refugees, but then they say they're not here to assimilate and they're not here to follow U.S. laws. So we have a mess on our hands in the USA as more tent cities are created and more infectious diseases are spreading, especially in California. And in California, there's an article that says, San Francisco's diseased streets are being compared to some of the worst slums in the world. Now, we know that not only do, as they say, slums, and especially corrupted inner cities, create more crime. And so not only does it spread disease, but also creates more crime and more danger to law enforcement. The article states, and this is by the Western Journal, a combination of discarded needles and piles of feces on the streets of San Francisco has caused at least one expert to say that the city's slums are comparable to those in developing countries. Reporters with KNTV investigated what they referred to as the disease streets of the city and found that each of the 153 downtown blocks that they surveyed, an area that encompasses playgrounds, hotels, and government buildings, is littered with garbage. Well, it's not only happening in San Francisco, it's happening in San Diego and all along the riverbeds in California. Included in the trash, there were at least 100 drug needles and 300 piles of feces. Now, someone has to clean that up, and someone has to pay for it. And we know who pays for these cleanups. That is the American taxpayers. That means our taxes must be increased. Dr. Lee Riley, an infectious disease expert at the University of California in Berkeley, warned that not only do the needles cause viral diseases such as HIV and hepatitis, but dried fecal matter can release airborne viruses like the rotavirus, R-O-T-A-V-I-R-U-S, rotavirus. This is really serious because in San Diego, there's an outbreak of a rare hepatitis disease where the influx of these illegals and alleged Christian refugees from the Middle East have been migrating, and there is a rare hepatitis disease that has spread, and people have died, Americans have died, and it's very, very serious. But unfortunately, the mainstream media doesn't talk much about these issues. But if you happen to inhale that, it can also go into your intestine. This expert said, leading to potentially fatal results. Riley, who has researched and written about conditions in slums across the world, believes that some parts of San Francisco may be worse than the world's dirtiest slums. The contamination is much greater than communities in Brazil or Kenya or India. He said, while pointing out that in those countries, slums often serve as long-term housing, and thus their residents work to maintain them. But in San Francisco, he suggested that the homeless do not make an effort to keep the streets clean because they are forced to move around frequently. The situation on the streets of San Francisco is particularly dangerous for children. We see poop, we see pee, we see needles, and we see trash, said Adelita Oriana, a preschool teacher. Sometimes they ask, what is it? And that's a conversation that's a little difficult to have with a two-year-old. But we just let them know that those things are full of germs, that they are dangerous, and they should never be touched. Another preschool teacher explained that the floor is dirty and that they are making her walk to school, and it is very difficult. There's poop in there, she said. That makes me angry, Reed's mother meanwhile noted that she often has to physically intervene to ensure that her daughter doesn't step on needles or human feces. Some city officials are convinced that the solution is to provide short-term housing for the city's homeless population. Unacceptable, absolutely unacceptable, said City Supervisor Hillary Ronan. We're losing tourists. We're losing conventions in San Francisco. All of this is happening because we aren't addressing the root cause, which is we need more temporary beds for street homelessness. The city currently has about 2,000 temporary beds, but Rosen believes about 1,000 more are needed. This would likely cost roughly $25 million. We need to find a source of revenue, she said, whether that's putting something on the ballot to raise business taxes or taking a look at our general fund and relocating money towards that purpose and taking it away from something else in the city. So as you can see, this is a very serious problem, and it's not just happening in San Francisco. And we have been inundated and flooded with foreigners flooding into our country for nearly 10 years now. And most of them end up on entitlement programs. So regardless, Ronan said, the situation in San Francisco is a human tragedy. We're not going to make a huge dent in this problem unless we deal with some underlying major social problems and issues, she stated. There's a human tragedy happening in San Francisco. Until a permanent solution is decided upon, all the city can do is remove the feces and the needles from the streets, an effort that costs the taxpayers in California about $30 million in the year between 2016 and 17, and that is according to Public Works Director Mohamed Nuru. Removing just one pile of human waste takes a half an hour, Nuru said. The steamer has to come. He has to park the steamer. He's got to come out with a steamer disinfectant, steam clean, roll up and go. The dirty streets in San Francisco haven't stopped it from being ranked among the most beautiful in the world, but the city is also one of the most expensive in the USA, with Fox News noting that this accentuates a large gap between the haves and the have-nots. So what do you think? And again, you can read this on the Western Journal. It is very important because infectious diseases and dirty needles and airborne diseases are a problem for the American. So now we're going to close our political commentary and we're going to enter into the world of authors and experts with our very special guest. And we will be back in just a moment, so don't touch that dial.
Listening is an art that humans are losing to the world of robots. Robots don't have any tone or human feelings. The addiction to communicate by texting isn't going away. People are feeling isolated, lonely, frustrated. People need people willing to listen to them. Can you imagine getting a text message that read, "You're fired," or "Hi, would you marry me?" It is happening. Columbo Chronicles is the option and the answer to human communication. Columbo Chronicles provides email access to your ideas and issues. Take advantage of this opportunity now. Go to columbochronicles.com. Click on subscribe today. Columbo is spelled C-O-L-O-M-B-O Chronicles. Fill out the form, submit it, bookmark and subscribe today. Remember the name, columbochronicles.com.
Keeping up with the news these days is like keeping up with the car... Well, you get the idea. There's a lot of yelling and screaming. Intelligent discussion, not so much. Ready for something refreshing, thought-provoking, and friendly? Okay, grab your favorite hot or cold drink, sit down, and listen to a friendly voice. The Columbo Chronicles Live with Rose Columbo on Blog Talk Radio. Every Wednesday night at 8 on the West Coast, or 11 for anyone sleepless on the East Coast, Rose Columbo welcomes dynamic authors and experts on a myriad of human interest topics. From politics to love, the environment, the mafia, healthcare, and more. It's 60 minutes of original entertainment and intriguing information with the top VIP guests. Senator John DeCamp exposing the Franklin cover-up. Dr. Tony O'Donnell, the herb doc. Dr. Alan Keyes discussing the White House. So, from Rose Columbo's home on the Columbo Chronicles Live to your home, Columbo says she doesn't want to have to send the familia to make sure you are listening.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up, everyone, and thanks for tuning in once again from around the world at Blog Talk Radio just for you. We have a very special guest tonight in our world of authors and experts. And tonight we have author Lee Gail Gruen, and Lee Gail is her first name. And she had a 37-year career as a probation officer. After retiring at age 60, just for fun, she started attending an acting class for seniors. A few weeks later, her mother died, unfortunately, and she invited her grieving father, age 85, to come to the class with her. This is a true story of their magical journey, attending that class for 3 years. Lee Gail wrote the comedy scenes, and they performed twice a year on stage in the class showcases. The father-daughter team became a popular item with her adoring audience, and included in the book that she's written are all six scenes, along with her motivation and the process of writing them, rehearsing them, and gathering the props. And her adventures with Dad are going to be shared with us, and she's going to tell us how she reinvented herself after retirement. So let's just welcome our very special guest, Lee Gail Gruen, and let's say hello. Hi, Lee Gail. How are you this evening?
I'm fine. Very nice to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you on Colombo Chronicles Live, and you have an interesting book and also an interesting true story. So I was wondering if you could tell us how you went from becoming a social worker for 37 years, which is a long time, a lot of years that you spent your life helping people. And what was it that you liked about being a social worker, and how does that help you in your new life as an author and an actress?
Well, actually, I was not a social worker. I was a probation officer. So I supervised adults who were convicted of crimes, and I learned a lot from my probation clients. I learned a lot about life, and I used so much of what I learned from them in portraying different characters as an actress. And also in my writing, just understanding human nature, really from 37 years of interacting with these people.
Very good. I was, I meant to say a probation officer, but social worker was on my mind because I have a friend with a close name as yours, and I was like, oh gosh, but probation officer, which is a great job. I mean, and you did it for 37 years. That's fantastic. Tell us, did you have a close relationship with your father as a child, or did that develop in your adult years or your senior years?
Well, my father, you know, when I was growing up, he was always working, and I was going to school. And then when he came home at night, you know, my mother and sister were there. So I never really had him alone. He was definitely a part of my life, but certainly not an exclusive part. And then when I grew up, I got married. I had children. I was working. So we really didn't have much time then either. But when I retired, I was divorced at that time. My children were grown. And within just a few weeks of retiring, my mother died. So here my father and I have all this time to be with each other. So what had happened when I retired, I had no idea what I was going to do with the rest of my life. And a friend told me about this class. It was a school that had classes for seniors. So I checked it out, and I saw this. It was called a scene study class. Even though the title of the section was theater arts, they called it scene study. And I had no idea really what that meant. I just assumed that you sat around and studied plays and discussed them, things like that. And I figured I liked plays, you know, and so I signed up for it, having no idea that I would be expected to act, to perform. I never would have signed up, not in a million years, if I had known that. I mean, I had
stage
fright,
like
standing in front of people, you know.
It was like it was meant to be.
it was really serendipity. And my first day in the class, a man came up to me and handed me some papers and said, "Here, you want to read these with me?" And I said, "Okay." You know, I didn't know what he was talking about. And he walks up to the front of the class, and I'm still sitting there, and he says, "Well, you know, come on." And I said, "Where?" He said, "Well, up to the front of the class. We're going to read this scene from a play." Well, my heart started pounding. You know, he expected me to stand in front of that room full of people. I mean, I looked at the door, seriously, with the thought of walking out. The only reason I didn't walk out was because I was too embarrassed to do so. I mean, I was a mature senior after all. How could I just slink out, you know?
That's so
walked
true.
Up to, and I walked up to the front of the class very slowly, dragging it out as long as I could. And by that time, I looked down at what he had handed me, and it was the first scene of Death of a Salesman, which is an extremely complex play.
Yes.
So,
oh, my goodness. But you got through it.
I'm standing in front of the class, and everybody's staring at me, you know, and I really didn't think any words were going to come out of my mouth. I didn't think I would even be able to talk. So I started to read in a very, very shaky, tiny voice. And within just a couple of sentences, the strangest thing happened to me. I became so engrossed in the character that I completely forgot that a room full of people was staring at me and judging me. And we read for 10 minutes. When it was over, I couldn't believe it. Everybody clapped because that's the protocol. You clap, not that I was so great. But that's what shook me out of my trance. And, you know, I looked at the class and I went, "Oh, my God, I just read for 10 minutes." And I was hooked. I was absolutely hooked.
You were hooked, yes. And so what made you decide to get your father involved in your reinvented career that you created as an actress?
Well, I was just in the class for about 2 weeks when my mother died. She had been ill, and she died, and it was just a shock to all of us. And my father, who was normally a very outgoing, charismatic type of personality, no stage fright for him, and he was just so despondent and withdrawn. And for some reason, I have no idea why I said this, but I just, trying to cheer him up, I said, "Come with me to my acting class, Daddy." And this is all in my book, by the way, everything I'm telling you. And he said, I don't want to. And I kept pushing him on it. "Oh, come on, we don't have to say anything. We'll just sit and watch." And I think he just didn't have the energy to keep resisting me. So we went to class, and we sat in the back. And about halfway through the class, you know, I had introduced my father when I came in. Halfway through the class, the teacher called on my father. She said, "Marvin, come on up to the front." And she called another student up and said, "I want you to do an improv." And she gave them, was going to give them a scenario. And I thought, oh, my father's not going to like this at all. But before I could say anything, he was walking jauntily up the aisle. And he did the improv. He loved it. He got into it. And on our way home, he said to me, "So what time are you picking me up next week for our class?"
Oh, wow.
And
that
that's
is
what
so
started
sweet.
It.
That is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, and not only did you reinvent yourself, you're reinventing your dad, and he's 85 years old, which
he
goes to show that it's never too late, is it? Just need a little encouragement. So,
you
were written up in quite a few magazines and so forth, such as Time Magazine, the Los Angeles Times newspaper, AARP Life Reimagined, and even in one of my favorites, Marlo Thomas, a 2014 book, It Ain't Over Till It's Over. And I think that's really exciting. So your book is actually a memoir, Adventures with Dad, A Father and Daughter's Journey Through a Senior Acting Class. And it was published in 2013, so and available on Amazon.com, which is great. So did this lead to other, your reinventing yourself? Did you think you were reinventing yourself, or did you realize it at the time that you were, or you were just like a snowball, you know, where things just keep evolving?
Yeah, I think it was the snowball part. I had no idea I was reinventing myself. All I know is that I was so hooked on acting, I couldn't get enough of it. And my father and I were just bonding more than ever. We were talking acting all the time. We were rehearsing. I wrote all the scenes that we performed in the acting class showcases, and they're all humorous father-daughter scenes, and the premise kind of behind all of them, they're all different, but the premise is that Dad is this irascible old character and always doing the most outlandish things, and his daughter is always pulling her hair out with his antics. And actually, this wasn't terribly far from the truth. So I used my father and some of the stuff that he'd done and we'd experienced kind of as inspiration for what I wrote. And he was a natural at it. He loved it. And the class loved us, and the audiences that came loved us. And we were the only father-daughter team ever in that senior acting class.
Wow, that's fantastic. So why do you feel why do you feel though that life isn't over after retirement, as many people do? They think once they're retired, life is over. It's too late to reinvent themselves. What would you say to them?
Well, I say this actually professionally. I'm now a professional speaker, public speaker, and I speak on the topic reinventing yourself in your retirement. And I also have been writing a blog for 5 years. It's a free blog, and it's called Reinventing Myself in My Retirement. And I am trying to show people that they, in this stage of their life, they can find joy, excitement, and satisfaction just like I did. So I would tell them. I mean, I know what's going on with a lot of people. This is what I talk about in my talks, that people retire, they don't know what to do with themselves, just like what happened to me. They don't feel useful. They don't feel needed anymore. Their kids don't really need them. They no longer have identities at their job. They become isolated. They become withdrawn. They become often depressed. And there's no need for that. There is so much available for baby boomers, for seniors, for retirees. So I try to present to them some of the ways that they can find something that they can turn into a passion, just like I did with acting. So I talk about how you can identify what might become a passion for you, where you can find it, how you can access it, where to go. So I discuss all of these things. I discuss in my talks why people are frightened to retire. They're frightened of having a life of that's meaningless. So many people are so frightened of retirement. And I discuss what does happen to a lot of people in retiring, which I said before, depression, withdrawing, feeling worthless. And I discuss how they can become excited about life, how they can find that thing that works for them.
And it's so important because life is precious. And we have the potential to learn more, to be more, to do more, no matter how old we are. And I think in our society, we've been told that you grow up and you go to school, you go to college, go to tech school, whichever. You get a career, you marry, you have kids, and then you retire and you hang out around the house. And I think that, with reinventing yourself as you are going out there and motivating people to do, especially baby boomers and seniors, I think that people will be motivated to think that, gee, if she can do it, why can't I do something that I've always dreamed about doing and never had the time to do in my life. So I think it's wonderful that you're doing this and giving people motivation and to embrace life no matter what age you are and to keep learning and being maybe who you were intended to be. Maybe it's to meet your destiny,
I never thought I would become an actress, believe me. I realized that I started all this because I realize I now have something to give back to the community. I went through the journey. No one was there to help me, and I found my passion. And I become not only an actress but also a writer, a public speaker, a blogger. I never envisioned something like this. So I feel that I can tell my story, which I do as part of my talk. I tell my personal story and help motivate people to seek their personal path. So, I have a website that people can look at and see some of this stuff I'm talking about. It's basically my book website, but I also talk about my talks and what I offer. And the website is adventureswithdadthebook.com.
Perfect. And your book is also on Amazon, Adventures with Dad. It's also available on Amazon, right?
Yes, Adventures with Dad. It's on Amazon. The whole title is Adventures with Dad, A Father and Daughter's Journey Through a Senior Acting Class.
And what motivated you not only to be an actress, but to write the book?
Well, my father and I would go to class every week, and we'd rehearse, and we'd perform, and all of these things. And we were just so well received. People just thought our story was so adorable and so wonderful. And at the acting class showcases, we attended the class together for 3 years, and we performed twice a year. And we always performed scenes that I wrote. And as I said, all 6 scenes are in the book. And a lot of senior acting classes use my book and use the scenes to perform in their classes. I know of several. So I was sitting with my father one time in class and thinking to myself, everybody seems to just love our story. I really ought to write a book about this, maybe for my kids or my grandkids or something. And then I would think, maybe the public might be interested in this. I mean, it is a very sweet story. And I went back and forth with this type of thinking in my head, and actually for years, because each time I would say to myself, oh, that's ridiculous, you're not a writer, well, what gave you an idea to do that. So I'd put the idea away, and back and forth for years. And one day, without having consciously thought of the book, maybe in a year or even 2 years, I woke up in the middle of the night, it was about 3:00 in the morning, with the book half written in my head. And I kept trying to bargain with myself. Well, you know, just go back to sleep and you'll write it down tomorrow. And this other voice was saying, get out of bed and start writing it down now.
Yeah,
so
I know that voice.
it's the same voice, I guess. This voice is walking around to all of us writers.
Exactly.
So finally, I couldn't go back to sleep. I got up, but I wasn't willing to walk down the hallway to get proper paper to write it down on. So the only thing that I could find in my bedroom to start writing down my thoughts, and I had the title, I had paragraphs, I had chapter headings, I had everything. And the only thing that I could find to write it on was a pack of Post-its. So this book began on a pack of Post-its.
I know that feeling, too.
Yes.
So, Lee Gail Gruen, how did you get an agent? Because I know your history now also involves film and television. And why don't you tell us a little bit about what shows you this all led to that you were a part of? And even
okay,
a co-star.
Well, I started networking with other people in my acting class, and I took a second senior acting class with someone else, and I started networking and learning how to go out on auditions and getting headshots and creating a resume. My first resume was pretty pathetic looking. It was only the stuff I'd done in acting class, so I kind of spread it around the paper to try to fill up all that white space as best I could. And I started finding where I could find out about auditions and going out on auditions, scared out of my mind, shaking in my shoes. But that little voice would not let me stop. It forced me to go. You know, again, I wanted to back out. I was looking at exit signs thinking I would leave, you know, and that little voice wouldn't let me. And little by little, the auditions got a little easier. Little by little, I actually started booking things. Then agents were interested in me, so I got some agents, and they started sending me out on auditions. So that's my journey by myself. My father wasn't involved in that. By that time, my father was bedridden in a nursing home. And I would go out on all these auditions, and I'd come sit by the side of his bed, and I'd share all of my experiences. And he was kind of living it vicariously through me.
Right.
And the things I've been in, oh, my heavens, I've done so many things. I've done several small roles on cable TV, done lots of commercials. I was in a 2016 Toyota Prius Super Bowl commercial that was shown just prior to part of Super Bowl week, and lots of other commercials for well-known products. I was in a Jane Fonda exercise DVD. She had started making DVDs again geared to baby boomers and seniors, so I was one of six exercise dancers backing her up. I worked at UCLA Medical School for many, many years, portraying patients for medical school student training. I did that.
Yes, and you were also on General Hospital.
I was the sexy senior on General Hospital one time. That's right.
Oh, my goodness.
I've done lots of, you know, I do small roles. I'm not a big deal actress, but, oh, I'm having so much fun.
Isn't that what it's all about, though? You reinvented yourself. You helped your father enjoy his new adventure with you, and that memory, you know, even though he became bedridden, he was able to, you know, bond with his daughter and do these wonderful things and have these wonderful memories, and so do you. I bet your family is really excited for you.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They think it's pretty wonderful stuff. And, you know, my grandkids, you know that I'm you know, involved in acting. And my son has just about gone crazy when he's seen me on, you know, national television on commercials, you know. And he just, I mean, he just, Mom, you know, he can't believe it.
I think it's fantastic.
Yes, my family thinks it's pretty terrific.
Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed this interview and listening to your story and your wonderful book, Adventures with Dad, A Father and Daughter's Journey Through a Senior Acting Class. And no, Lee Gilgrun is not a social worker, was not a social worker. She was a probation officer who reinvented herself at retirement into acting and writing and becoming an author. And now is your time to shine, and you can give our audience any message you like about yourself, your books, and any projects or public speaking you're doing, and your website.
Okay, fine. The name of my book, as we've said a few times, is Adventures with Dad, A Father and Daughter's Journey Through a Senior Acting Class. It is available on Amazon.com. My book website, and also has a special tab for my public speaking, is adventureswithdadthebook.com. And my last name is spelled Gruen, G-R-U-E-N. I write a free blog where I share my thoughts, observations, and experiences, which I think are universal to my age demographic, that is seniors. And the name of my blog, anybody can access it and sign up for it, is Reinventing Myself in My Retirement. Reinventing Myself in My Retirement. So if you Google that, you can find my blog and you can go and read it and sign up for it. And my public speaking is a similar title, Reinventing Yourself in Your Retirement. And I tell people my story and how I did it and how they can do something similar that really they can customize for themselves and their personalities and their interests.
Well, thank you so much, Lee Gilgrun, and much success, and keep up the good work, and, you know, keep motivating seniors and baby boomers, because I think it's a wonderful, wonderful new career and a beautiful reinvention for not only yourself, but to motivate other people to do the same and find their passion and maybe their dream that they never, ever thought would come true. So again, thank you so much, Lee Gilgrun, and God bless you, and take care, and we'll talk to you again.
Thank you very much, Rose. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye. And our very special guest, Lee Gilgrun, has left the building, and we are now going to leave the world of authors and experts and enter into the world of politics. So don't touch that dial, because we'll be back in just a moment.
Keeping up with the news these days is like keeping up with the car. Well, you get the idea. There's a lot of yelling and screaming. Intelligent discussion, not so much. Ready for something refreshing, thought-provoking, and friendly? Okay, grab your favorite hot or cold drink, sit down, and listen to a friendly voice. The Columbo Chronicles Live with Rose Columbo on Blog Talk Radio. Every Wednesday night at 8 on the West Coast, or 11 for anyone sleepless on the East Coast, Rose Columbo welcomes dynamic authors and experts on a myriad of human interest topics, from politics to love, the environment, the mafia, healthcare, and more. It's 60 minutes of original entertainment and intriguing information with the top VIP guests. Senator John DeCamp exposing the Franklin cover-up, Dr. Tony O'Donnell, the herb doc, Dr. Alan Keyes discussing the White House. So, from Rose Columbo's home on the Columbo Chronicles Live to your home, Columbo says she doesn't want to have to send the familia to make sure you are listening.
That's right. We don't want to have to send the bad guys to come and get you to listen to Columbo Chronicle Live. So, now we're entering back into the world of politics and news of the day or issues of the day, whichever you prefer to call this particular article that I found disturbing. We just don't know what people are doing today or why they're doing it, but it is disturbing of the human behavior that is happening in our country. And the Western Journal published this article, and it's about animal abuse. It's 898 animals, almost 1,000 animals, were seized from a family home, and the carcasses were stored in a freezer, and it just goes on and on and on. It just makes you wonder, what is happening? Is it social media that we're learning more and more about things that are really disturbing? A Vinton, Iowa couple has landed in police custody after nearly 900 animals were found living in horrid conditions under their roof. The Cedar Valley Humane Society, the workers and the volunteers worked tirelessly as anywhere between 500 to 1,000 animals were evaluated, forcing the center to close temporarily at the influx of animals from homeowner Barbara Gokowski. Authorities were initially sent to the home after receiving a nuisance complaint and a call about vicious animals. And they wound up rescuing sick and suffering rabbits, rats, mice, hedgehogs, chinchillas, turtles, fish, birds, hamsters, guinea pigs, gerbils, and a ball python. You know, it just makes me wonder and appreciate law enforcers even more than we did before. If you just think about some of the horrific cases that they're called to investigate and to enter into these filthy homes where there's either human abuse or filth or animal abuse. And, I mean, seriously, they truly earn their wages. As a young girl, I worked for the sheriff's department, and not as a sheriff, but as in the administrative part. And I can tell you, some of the reports were pretty grueling, but nothing like today's world. We are really in a dark place in not only the USA, but around the world. Death is everywhere. Destruction is everywhere. We're killing babies at birth. Nearly 70 million babies killed with abortion scissors, stabbed to death. And they call it legal. And they call it a right. And yet, they complain when someone shoots 1 to 17 people with a gun, which is an isolated case, by someone who's allegedly mentally disturbed and who's probably on prescription or illegal drugs. And many of those drugs cause hallucinations, homicidal tendencies, suicidal tendencies, violence, acting out, mind-altering, and they're not looking at the core problems. They're looking at the guns. Well, more people get killed with knives, and more people die from alcoholism than they do from guns. And you can look up those statistics. It's a true fact. So every time someone shoots someone, it means that the Democrats and the liberals are going to come after the Second Amendment and try to eliminate it, which would mean that the only people that had guns would be the government and the criminals. So the innocent, law-abiding people who only own guns in case they need to defend their country their person, their family, or their property would be defenseless. And we know throughout history what happens to a country that is unarmed. It's called genocide. Anyway, this article goes on to say that according to the Courier, some animals that were alive had been stuck in cages with those that were long dead, and many that were found alive were in extremely poor health and in need of immediate care. Several dead animals were found scattered throughout the residence in various states of decomposition or stored in a freezer. The sickly animals were also removed by volunteers from the Humane Society, Friends of the Shelter, and Wild Thunder Animal Rescue, who brought them safely to receive the care they needed. God bless these people who go out and rescue these animals, because it has to be a really gruesome scene and very heartbreaking to see what some people do to animals, not just to humans, but to animals. It's very disturbing. And thank God, again, that we have people who care about the animals and will rescue them, and also law enforcers who are called to these scenes and must enter this residence and face whatever tragedy they must witness and perform their duty. Very, very serious jobs that our law enforcers are called out to do. And believe me, they earn every penny that they are paid. And then over in, I mean, we're living in such a violent world today. It's not just killing off babies, natural-born babies in America and around the world with our tax dollars for big profits. But it's also just a violent world we're living in. This 19-year-old gang rape victim, she's the victim in Saudi Arabia, this young girl who was raped received 200 lashes and 6 months in jail. That is her punishment for being raped in their country. And, of course, if you remember the scenes in the Roman days when all of the people were gathered in the arenas to watch people being eaten up by lions or killing each other with weapons or being beaten up as punishment. This is what's happening over in this country. It's Saudi shame is what it is. This 19-year-old young girl is the victim of a violent gang rape in Saudi Arabia, and she's been sentenced to 200 lashes, if she even lives through that, and 6 months in jail. I mean, seriously, why are we funding these countries? I mean, think about it. Why are we funding these countries? This poor young girl is being beaten to death and jailed because she was gang raped. I would like our legislators to tell us, why are we funding the Muslim Brotherhood and CARE? Why are they even in our country? They do not believe in women's rights, and their written and stated strategic goal is to wipe out Europe, America, Israel, Canada, all Western civilization. They need to explain that to us. It's been going on for 10 years now. They need to explain it to the American people. And the American people need to demand that they explain it. And speaking about violence and unbelievable things that are happening, I mean, there's people in the news more and more who are raping animals. we really need to figure out who's in our country and what's happening to our country and how are we going to turn our country around and bring back God, morals, principles, values operated by the rule of law. And no one should be held above the law. Just because you're a lawmaker or a law enforcer doesn't mean that you can hold yourself above the law. But that's what's happening in this country, as we are witnessing. And we need to figure out as a country how we're going to preserve our nation and preserve the Constitution of the United States, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, our Christian foundation, as all our laws are rooted into the Bible and Ten Commandments. That is the Christian foundation of this nation. And traditional marriage, that was intended to create the family, was the foundation unit. The family unit is the foundation of a civilized nation. And now we have about 50 to 70% of people getting divorced every year. And we have latchkey kids. And there's no dad at home. And we're seeing disturbed young teenage boys acting out. And we're seeing young teenage girls getting pregnant because they don't have a dad to pat them on the back and guide them and tell them they're beautiful and they're precious and guiding them in the right direction. So we really need to unite in this country the true loyal Americans, patriots, constitutionalists, and come together and figure out how we're going to restore morals, values, principles, integrity, good character, and so our youth can grow up in a safe nation and respect our nation and respect the people in office. It's very, very important that we stand up, speak up, speak out, and become the leaders that we need to be in order to restore peace in the world and to restore the republic operated by the rule of law for all people equally, differently, without bias and political favoritism and nepotism. And on that note, I say God bless you wherever you are in the world. God bless America, and may God keep his hand on America and all nations around the world. So stay healthy, stay happy, God bless you, and I'll talk to you next Wednesday at 12 o'clock noon from 12 to 1 p.m. Check out the time in your state and your country. Bookmark and follow. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.